still didn't do it right.
All right, everyone. Good evening. It's Saturday Night Live with the Hoax Busters again. And I'm sure we'll have an interesting show. Hopefully we'll get some people to call in and share some of their thoughts on things. Again, this is Speak Free Radio. And we are very appreciative that we can be on this platform to get our information out. And, of course, we have the books that are sold on Money Tree Publishing. That's all part of this, too, which, again, we'll talk about that at the break. So we always usually start off with Diane covering some information about the book there. Where's your book there, Miss Diane? There it is, 6 Million Fact to Fiction. We've been covering that every week, just a little bit of it, you know, maybe 10 or 15 minutes of it. And we'll go through that. We'll cover
Thank
some information
you,
on that.
Mm-hmm.
And what we'll do is we'll see who's in the queue that wants to come in to talk. And we'll go from there. But we always have a lot to talk about. I've been putting a ton of videos up on my BitChute channel that we can definitely talk about. A lot of interesting short videos I can even play.
That's right.
And we'll do that. And, we'll go from there. So, you know, we might as well get started. And Diane, we'll let you start with you can tell us where you are in the book, what pages and all that.
Absolutely.
Okay.
We are in, a lot of people say there should be a lot more demonstrations. Perhaps after 20 years of Henry demonstrating in front of the synagogue, he might want to reconsider possibly a tactic, but we really appreciate his efforts. Our point is that InfoWars is where the battle is, because that's where they're attempting to make laws against us. And one of the biggest ways that they're trying to prohibit discussion is by making laws against discussion of the Holocaust. And like in the 70s, when the revisionists were coming out against a number of the movies as such to dispute a number of the claims, to dispute them, is because there were obvious errors. And when they started doing that, that's when they pulled all the stops, the Jews pulled all the stops to prohibit our discussion. The more they did that, and there's a line in the first Star Wars that we saw, the more you tighten your grip, the more star systems slip through your fingers. That's what the line was in the first, which actually is the fourth Star Wars movie. So the more tyrants attempt to squeeze and oppress and control, the more people become aware and familiar and informed. And that's what we're doing. We had discussed the particulars dealing with the Holocaust, the nuts and bolts, if you want to call it, things that Jim has been focusing on for a decade or two. And in as we understand, Michael Jones is attempting or planning to write a sequel to the Holocaust narrative, which includes, we hope, to the extent it should, the nuts and bolts. If he is honest and genuine, he will read this book, The 6 Million Fact or Fiction. He will read the pamphlet, Did 6 Million Really Die? He will read The Myth of German Villainy and become informed instead of entertaining thoughts in his own mind. Okay, that's a little pre-promotion for the book. we finished the section on, the major section on Auschwitz, spoke about the two Auschwitz commandants, Hirsch and Baer. And now we're going to talk about Oscar Gröning, the accountant of Auschwitz. This individual, understanding, now admittedly he might have been pressured, understanding his limitations, should definitely have said nothing. Just like I've said, David Irving should not have said anything in regard to partial gassing. These guys should just, it's okay to just plead the fifth and say nothing. Okay, chapter 10. Page 174, Oscar Gröning, the accountant of Auschwitz, emerges after 60 years of silence. Okay. And this is a very, very short chapter. In 2005, Britain's BBC 2 channel broadcast a 6-episode documentary on the Holocaust titled Auschwitz, the Nazis, and the Final Solution. Now talk about those who created, were part of those who created the Holocaust, MI6, and other black ops out of England. are going to provide via the authorities. This show repeated most of the usual Holocaust storyteller canards, but introduced one new topic, a former SS man, Oscar Gruning, who claimed to have been at Auschwitz in an administrative role as an official. You better be careful if you're typing in a concentration camp. You could be brought up on charges. Official collector of money and valuables taken from Jews, he says. In the show, Gruning said that he sought to oppose the Holocaust. This he said. We don't know how he was provoked on this. Oppose the Holocaust deniers who claim that Auschwitz never happened. And that's why I'm here today, because he said, I want to tell those deniers I have seen the crematory. I have seen the burning pits in Auschwitz, mind you. And I want you to believe me, these atrocities happened. I was there. Now, this individual, after 60 years of silence, he's in his 80s, I believe, at this point. It is therefore of great value to carefully analyze the claims made by this important witness. Peter Winters is always one about the cross-examination. According to Gruning's account, his experience were as follows. He volunteered for the SS in 1940. In 42, he was posted to Auschwitz. In December 42, he was ordered to stand guard on the Auschwitz ramp and stop anyone from stealing the luggage being unloaded from the trains. On that day, his first day of the Auschwitz ramp, he witnessed another SS guard smashing a baby's head against a trunk until it was a truck, until it was dead. One night in same December 42, he woke up to the sound of alarms. Some Jews had escaped. He ran through the dark until he reached a farm where he sees, and I remember Gruning saying this, sees corpses littering the ground. He watches as naked people are herded into the farmhouse and sees a senior officer shut the door, pull a gas mask over his head, and open a can and pour the contents into a hatch. Then he hears screams. The screams turn into a thundering noise. The thundering becomes humming, and then it's quiet. He returns to his barrack with another man. The other man says, I know a shortcut. Along the way, the other man tells Gruning what happens when corpses are burned on grates. The bodies straighten and the men's penises become erect, he says. Can we see any problems with this narrative? The shortcut takes the two men past a pyre where corpses are being cremated. Gruning moves closer to see what happens when human beings burn. Closer. Okay, remember, the amount of temperature you have to burn a body, and you're going to move closer to this fire. That was the only time I saw a complete gassing, he said. In 44, he was transferred to a combat unit on the Western Front. There he was taken prisoner and held in a POW camp in Britain. He returned to Germany and became a manager in a factory, a bookkeeper. Okay, now let's analyze this. Jim, did you want to contribute anything before we go into the official analogy of it, of what might be wrong with this narrative?
Well, there's a bunch of things wrong with it.
Okay, please feel free.
He's a liar. All right, and he talks about crematory. He talks about no gas chambers. I mean, you did mention them at the end there, but there's no gas chambers, so he's obviously making that up. Now, he also talked about burning pits.
Okay.
Now, that's kind of a controversial thing, because I never really, found out if there were burning pits in Auschwitz. There might have been some sort of, pit there where they threw bodies in, but, I mean, they had crematories, so I really don't know why they would have a pit.
What would be the problem with attempting to burn bodies in pits at Auschwitz?
Well, obviously, Auschwitz had a high water table. You couldn't dig down more than 5 feet without hitting water.
That's right.
There's no way you can dig a pit there. You're going to be in water. You can't burn them. I mean, see, these people just don't understand how nonsensical things are. Let's say there were pits. Well, you couldn't use them. You couldn't burn a body in them because it's too wet. It's going to be all wet.
And so, certainly not the amount that they think. The next thing, of course, is pyres, talking about burning pyres. And Denier Bud has spoken on one-third of the Holocaust, how long it takes to burn a body, open-air pyre.
Well, first of all, he talked about a pyre, but I haven't seen anything of any pyres in Auschwitz.
Not in Auschwitz.
In Treblinka, they talked about.
They claim pyres. That, yes.
Okay, they claim that.
Right.
But not Auschwitz. Again, remember, Auschwitz was completely set up to take bodies that died from the morgue and put them in the crematory. That's all it was. So, you know, you had a morgue and you had a crematory. And you burned the bodies in the crematory.
Surprisingly, that's the most efficient, as it turns out. That's how they dispose of bodies in Europe.
Well, that's how it worked out. Not all the camps in Europe with the Germans, you know, that they ran, not all of them had crematories, okay? I think most of them did, but I don't think all of them did. You know, it all depends on the situation. If there was a lot of people dying in the camps, I'm sure they would have had a crematory.
They would have had to create them.
I would think so. Okay, but not all of the places had crematory because not all these camps people were dropping like flies, like Auschwitz.
Yeah.
Because we're talking transit camps now.
Yes.
And these transit camps were where hundreds of people were coming in. And out, coming in and out, coming in and out. So
very quickly, very quickly. Towards the end of the war, it was even quicker.
That's right.
Timing was of the essence.
Right. So anyway, this guy, he's a liar. Yeah. That's all he is. He's just a big liar. They got to tell a story, and nobody questions him on it. Nobody says if what he's saying is true, and that's how it's always going to be. You know,
that's right.
Too late now to talk to him.
Okay, now let's take Peter's analysis. The most obvious lie in Gröning's account is his claim to have served on the Auschwitz. Okay, that's interesting. Already at the very beginning, remember when he was supposedly to serve on the ramp, Auschwitz ramp, in December 42. Okay. As already discussed in chapter on Auschwitz, the ramp was only built in May of 44 and was used for the first time in that month. For that reason, it's impossible for Gröning to have been allocated guard duty on the ramp in 42 for the simple and obvious reason that it did not exist at that time. Again, time and understanding when these things go in is very critical in debunking this. And most people don't keep track of the dates like this. Okay, so the ramp. This means that his testimony about a baby having smashed against a truck on the ramp is also highly dubious. That's not something the Germans did. That was something the Russians did. And again, others have mentioned that the Holocaust was created in Russia.
Well, why would anybody do that?
Why would you do that? It takes time, for one thing.
Well, no, but I mean, what would be the purpose of doing something so stupid like that?
Exactly.
They have to have the most horrific stories. And that story is that's just one of many times it's been told of other camps doing the same thing. Okay.
Right.
Same story, different camp, you know, it was on a rock, on a wall, they smashed them against whatever.
I mean,
it's just different story. Okay.
Okay. His account of witnessing a gassing is equally doubtful. Firstly, although his gassing in a farmhouse in the middle of the night, in the forest, bears no relation to any other claim or eyewitness. As grossly, outrageously exaggerated, nobody else talked about this. It could conceivably be claimed that he is referring to the claimed gassings at the so-called provisional gas chambers, also known in Holocaust legend as Bunker 1 and Bunker 2. I guess that's the White House and the Red House.
Again, I don't know. They were just farmhouses. That's all they were. They made a story into these farmhouses being places where they gas people. And even David Irving fell for this bullshit.
Yeah.
I mean, he even went along with a toe. It's like, David, what are you out of your mind? These are just barn houses. Okay? Show me the mechanisms if you were going to do it. How would you do it? Let's say there was a gas chamber there. It was just a barn.
It's going to be too many holes, too many slats. It would not have been sealed well enough.
Again, they could say anything was used as a gas chamber and not have any proof that it could be done. I mean, they just make up anything. It's ridiculous.
Exactly. Oh, some kind of warning. It's raining bullshit. That's true. I don't know. We got to weather something.
Bullshit tonight. So go outside and open wide. It's raining bullshit tonight.
Just right on schedule, you might say.
Yeah.
Okay.
Boom.
Yeah.
Even even if this is a reference to these installations. No Holocaust storyteller claimed the Jews gassed at these bunkers were burned on grates in the forest. Those are two parts. There's not a single statement nor claim in this regard, as even the claims of burning pits are always said to have happened inside the camp perimeter. And we talked about that. At this stage, it's also significant to note that Gruning claimed to have spent at least 2 years at the camp, but somehow he never heard of the alleged four big gas chambers and crematory inside the camp. Finally, and most disturbingly, his claim that the dead males on the funeral pyres had erections is so obviously made up hearsay nonsense. There's no medical condition which can cause this. That it is an indication of the wild tales Gruning was recounting at this time. And it was like probably 6 million of them. See if you can come up with the most outrageous scenario that won't be questioned. Okay. Yeah. So he was, as a result of his public comments, he was officially charged with having been an accessory to murder at Auschwitz in 2014, because you know how deadly those administrative people are. Yeah. Okay, and so anyway, the court case actually commenced on April 2015 and quickly broke down into a farce. Okay, he accused Gruning, survivor witnesses, of exaggerating, said the Red Cross had visited Auschwitz, so he's flip-flopping on his story. When you've got a so-called eyewitness flip-flopping on the story, well, you'd think that they'd toss out his testimony. Despite the Holocaust storytellers claiming that there was a gas chamber near the entrance gate to that camp, that there was a brothel for prisoner use at the camp, and finally he refused to listen to any more testimony one day after being forced to hear a survivor rehash the "I pulled gold teeth from dead corpses" claim. He couldn't handle their stories. In addition, Gruning also told the court that what he knew about Auschwitz was limited to what other people had told him. This included his claim that the camp could dispose of 5,000 people every 24 hours, which he specifically said other people had told him, as he personally had never seen or experienced the 5,000 per day death process. What a shock. Ultimately, once caught up in the story, Gruning was left with little alternative but to follow the "don't deny it happened." And this is a tactic that they were led, don't deny it happened, but I was not involved type of confession. It was a dangerous game, which ultimately saw him sentenced to 4 years in prison on the basis of a claim which was clearly untrue. He died in 2018 after losing several appeals, but before he could begin serving his sentence. So what motivated Gruning? At this juncture, it's pertinent to ask this. That would cause him to make all these statements, particularly as they are so obviously incorrect. The answer to this is probably linked to his age, as he was 84 years old when he first went public with his allegations. The most likely answer to the question of why he would, after more than 60 years of silence on the matter, suddenly emerge with what are obviously manufactured lies is that he had read these claims over the years and had convinced himself in his dotage that he had either seen or lived them, or that he could speak out against deniers because of his background and thereby find some redemption for having served in the SS. Gruning possibly actually believed the lies he was telling and that he was achieving something by repeating these hearsay lies. However, the only thing he actually achieved was being arrested and charged, a development of which he went on record as being greatly shocked. He thought that this would redeem him. If it was his aim to counter the deniers, he failed in his aim to making a simple mistake, namely that of repeating some of the most absurd lies without first checking them out. And these had already been debunked. So that's the end of chapter 10.
Okay, so is that it?
That's it.
Okay, yeah, so I just think it's crazy how, you know, next thing they'll be doing is finding out who's the dog walker. Well, the dog walker, we're going to charge them for, you know, doing something.
Who took care of those vicious guard dogs?
The vicious guard dogs that had sex with the women in the camp. That was
I think they should call the SPCA for animal cruelty.
It just gets so silly because they got to bring all these people in and, they got to make something out of nothing. And again, there's no cross examining. You can't say anything to make the guy innocent. Obviously the guy, 84 years old, he's probably not even all there anyway.
That's what Peter was suggesting.
Yeah. I mean, I would think, you know, the guy, you know, he's thinking that he's going to look like a good guy by saying all these lies. But anyway, he ended up dying you know, before he went to jail, I guess, right? That's what it said?
Yeah, for 4 years, but he died in the third year.
Yeah. So that was into him. But anyway, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of other people that they brought to trial for the silliest causes, or, you know, you know, whatever the job they had, an accountant in a camp, you know, the most vicious thing he did was typed, you know, on a typewriter. And
that was the problem. He was a bookkeeper, essentially.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that's a, you know, that's a really bad job you had. You were putting down the number of people that were coming into the camp, and that made you a bad guy.
Public enemy number one, just saying.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so that's okay. That was that about him, and you know, it is what it is. So, okay, so we'll move on. We don't have anybody in the queue. Do we have anybody that's
tonight, Uncle Murray?
Oh, he's in the building.
Henry, perfect timing. Good.
How are you doing, brother?
Okay, Henry. Very good. Hello. Welcome, Henry. How's it going?
Good timing.
Yeah. Well, I've been waiting. I read that whole thing with you, Diane.
Oh, good. Okay.
Word for word. And Jim, I have to admonish you a little bit because you missed an obvious question.
Okay.
I want to see if I read this right. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm on top of page 175, Diane.
Sir? Okay.
On that day, his first day at the Auschwitz camp, he witnessed another SS guard smashing a baby's head against a truck until it was dead. How do you know when a truck is dead? The battery falls out.
It
runs out of oil. Or
obviously, I'm talking about the
very, very obvious question to be asked there.
he killed the truck.
Yeah. I mean, you know, in a place when resources are scarce, why would you do something like that?
Yeah, why would you kill a truck? You know, it's just good point.
Okay.
Anyhow, all right, so, go ahead. I had an interesting experience today.
All righty.
There was a man who crept by our cars and looked at our signs at our vigil. I guess people should know that I protested in front of a synagogue on Saturday mornings and have been doing it for 20 years. And today, in a red Jeep, this man cruised by us and then went down the street and parked. And I had to, it's just a nuts and bolts thing, but I had to repark my car. And so I walked up alongside of his and I asked him if he had any, did he want to have a discussion? And he said, I don't think I can have a discussion with haters like you, cause I might lose my cool.
Oh, really?
And I said, well, that wouldn't be right. I wouldn't want to have a discussion with that either, but maybe we could, you know, we did have a conversation, and it was, you know, he was a Christian man from West Virginia. He, you know, he felt for the Jews, but he also felt for the Palestinians. And it's interesting. I'm hoping to look at the videos that I took today to get the, you know, the verbatim of our conversation and our give and take. But I do remember at one point, telling him, you know, hey, we better stop talking now because we're agreeing on more points than we are disagreeing with. So it was like, even though we called him a negative, he went from not being able to have a civil conversation. He didn't think he could, but then he did have a civil conversation. And we didn't call anybody names. I never do.
No, I know you
don't. But it's just an amazing. And I know that the Palestine isn't your main focus as it is mine. But there are demonstrations on college campuses,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think it's important for the listeners to know that. You know, Jewish Voice for Peace is very active. It's a Jewish organization, claims it's for peace. They're very efficient at organizing, and I think they are fundamentally behind these campus protests. Now, the campus protests, you know, clearly, in my view, And I can discuss this with anybody that wants to discuss it. The solution to the Palestine problem is either for the Jews to leave Palestine or to agree to live there under Palestinian rule. But it's a, you know,
the day.
They stole the land and they have to give it back. I'm going to be a positive thinker on this, Diane, and keep pushing forward. But you know that, and it just amazes me. We went onto the campus and we engaged two girls. I'd say they were probably 19 years old. They were manning the booth. Of course, in Ann Arbor, you can't say manning the booth because that's sexist.
Is that right? Okay.
Or whatever they do. And anyhow, and so I asked them an obvious question to me. I said, does Israel have a right to exist as a Jewish state? And they were flummoxed by that question. And I think it's a very basic question. I think it's a very easy answer. And the answer is no, they don't have a right. That what they have stolen is the sympathy of the world because of the Holocaust. So nobody suffers like the Jews do, and the Palestinian suffering is second rate. And so I'm having this conversation with these young women, and an older woman comes up wearing a turned around collar. So I don't know what denomination she was. I have a funny feeling she was from Trinity Church in town, and she barged in, and she says, "I'm going to call this conversation to a halt."
Oh, you? She is, huh?
What do you think?
Well, who gave her that authority?
Really? It was like, you know, who died and left you God? You know, and it was like, my goodness, you know, I said, wait a minute. This is a state institution. I'm a state taxpayer, you know, and we're talking and we're having a conversation here. It's not like I'm badgering these girls. You know, I just wanted to know, people need to learn to think about this thing. Anyhow, the Jews in the peace movement have very cleverly shifted the debate from, you know, blaming Jews for the Jewish state's crimes against Palestinians,
yep,
committed with Jewish soldiers wearing Jewish religious symbols on their clothing, on their weapons, on the planes. You know, so they've shifted the blame from the Jewish community or Jews in general or Jewish elites, whatever you want to talk about that. Now they're going to blame the University of Michigan for investing in companies. So the big cry on campuses is to have the universities divest. Now, that might be a good thing, but people who have been steeped in this issue, like me, for 20 years, I see what they're doing. You know, it's easy to hold the University of Michigan accountable, but divesting from a couple of companies isn't going to bring peace to Palestine. Mm-hmm. What's going to bring peace to Palestine is for Jews, in Helen Thomas's words, to get the hell out.
Yeah,
that's what has to happen. And and you know, so people that don't want to talk about this, oh, we only want to go one step at a time. I met some Palestinian members of the community here, one of which is a member of Jewish Voice for Peace. And I said, Jewish Voice for Peace is a Zionist organization, and they won't even listen. And it's, I say, isn't it easy to figure this out? I mean, if Zionism was a political movement to build a Jewish state, shouldn't anti-Zionism be a political movement to tear down a Jewish state or dismantle a Jewish state? You know, but nobody calls for that. So the JVP, Jewish Voice for Peace crowd, they want to claim the anti-Zionist mantle, but they don't do what anti-Zionists should do, and that is call for an end of the state of Israel.
So what happened when the woman told to shut down the conversation? What happened?
Well, I said, listen, we're gonna talk a little bit longer here. I mean, you know, and then the girls were so flummoxed that maybe, you know, pushing them would have been badgering on my part. So in fact, Margot interjected. I had said, you know, it's an easy question. Israel doesn't have a right to exist as a Jewish state on somebody else's land and somebody else's property and kicking people off with violence, you know. And so and Margot said, why don't you let the girls answer the question? And I did. And it was like, they were embarrassed because they had never asked themselves that question before, you know, and it really exposes the control that the Jewish students have over their classmates because they have ingratiated themselves with it, which causes, I mean, you guys saw the video of me speaking at city council.
I read what also what you see. Yeah, but yes.
Yeah.
Also, for that woman to say that to you to the girls, intimidates them too. If they were actually trying to think along the lines you were presenting, by her being there,
yeah,
she's this gruesome intimidator, and so they're not going to get themselves into trouble possibly.
Yeah,
with her.
Well, I should have asked her. You know, what's your feeling to the fact that your co-religionists in Jerusalem are being spat upon?
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
You know, and you know, I should have done that, but I was just really amazed that she would have the temerity to come in and say, I'm going to call this conversation to a close.
Yeah, she had the absolute gall. Joe, Jim's brother, would also talk about how clergy, particularly Christians, particularly, or Catholics, we kind of make the distinction. If they are there in Jerusalem or in Israel, the declared Israel of today, they do risk getting spit on by by the Pharisees and by the Jewish leadership. Any Jew, basically.
You know, Tucker Carlson finally crossed the line and interviewed a pastor in the West Bank who explained it all very clearly. Very, you know, matter-of-factly, use the J word. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not supposed to use the J word, but he did, and I thought that was so grand that I joined Tucker's network. So now
I think with him, and I see that with Mark Dice too. It gets to the point it's that's all I can stand. I can't stand no more, and I'm no more Mr. Nice Guy kind of thing. So now I'm going to say what I've been holding back on. And I think each of these pundits are going to take that step across the line.
Uh-huh. Well, I give him credit for what he's done. You know, I know that he's operating in a Jewish-controlled world,
yeah,
and probably can be shut down at any time. And I guess TikTok is on the verge of being shut down.
Well, I understand. They're declaring that as a case because it's supposedly Chinese-owned. Therefore, it's a conflict.
Yeah, that's a load of BS, isn't it? Yeah,
of course it is.
You know,
they're making a mistake with that whole thing. You know, because if you can target Chinese items, can't you target every other one?
In other words, they're making a precedent. In this country, but the problem is the Chinese own a lot of the notes on a lot of our debts. So I'm not sure why we want to stick the stick in their face on these things.
Right. Well, it's going to come back to bite them like it always does.
The control by the Jewish lobby in this country is vast.
Yeah,
it's infiltrated down to the campuses. I mean, I'm fine with the students doing the protests. I think it's causing this tragedy, this genocide, to be brought to light, and that's good. But I'm not fooled. I know the power players and the strings. Chris, my buddy, sent an email this week, said, wouldn't it be great if the students walked the mile from campus to where we stand in front of the synagogue and joined us?
Yeah.
And we said, yeah, you are dreaming. But it's going to, we're out there now and we're questioning death camps and we're questioning 6 million and we're questioning gas chambers. And I think that, and we're still winning. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly what the score was today, even with that guy's negative. See if I can bring it up easy. No, I guess I can't. I'm a little challenged here.
What your school is doing, a number of schools, particularly there was the law had come up for Abbott to sign, which he did, forcing any agency that receives government funding cannot participate in BDS. The boycott, divestment, sanctions.
Sanctions, yes.
And there was that one lady who, and you had to sign a loyalty oath to Israel. And this one lady who was I think Palestinian here in Texas refused to do it. What happened is at that point, the Supreme Court overturned it. Now, whether it was resubmitted and passed and, you know, kind of under cloak of darkness, I'm not sure. But it may see the light of day again if this is attempted. But it's
I think they're going to start broadening the definition of anti-Semitism.
Oh, yeah.
To include shows like this, to include protests like mine.
Yep.
You know, and I think we need to gird our loins because this is going to be a long haul. But it's so frustrating that people on the, you know, supposedly on the peace side of things for Palestine don't want to rush into this. I mean, I re-met a man on campus today that I'd known for 20 years. I haven't spoken to him in the last 10, but because our paths haven't crossed, there's no bad blood. But you know, this Palestinian guy has joined Jewish Voice for Peace.
Timing is of the essence. To drag your feet because you don't want to offend them, I think that ship has sailed. They're so offended. All you have to do is question anything that they're saying, and they're offended.
Yeah. So I think that, another friend of mine, I was trying to explain why I thought that JVP was a Zionist organization, crypto-Zionist, because they're not calling for an end to Israel, and she walked away.
Wow, I mean,
people are just amazing. But I have the good news is I have ordered my book on Breaking the Spell by Nick Kollerstrom, and I'm going to send it to my motorcycle buddy Molly and see if I can get her to read it because she was the one that shut me down at the last rally we were at when I said, I can't go to France. I can't go to Germany. I can't travel. I can't go to Canada now because I'm a Holocaust denier. And she said, well, you can't deny it happened. And I said, there were no bystanders. And she
about
said,
that.
I stood in one. I said, you stood in a post-war reconstruction. And she said, this conversation's over.
I remember you mentioned that. Boy, that's
anyhow, I'm going to spend the dime, buy her a book. And lead the horse to water and see if she drinks.
Okay. You've salted it enough. It should make her thirsty.
There you go. Well, that's my report.
Henry.
Well, good enough. Well, thank you for telling us what's going on there. And I'm sure it's going to get more excited as the days go on.
We have your article. We have what you sent. The main thing, and I think you've shared this before, so it's kind of important, that after squinky dinkily, after you returned, after your presentation on IHR gathering, your YouTube channel was removed.
Yeah.
So was it something you said? Okay, just saying.
Well, it was. There must have been a mole in the audience or something like that. And I'm such a small-time player.
Yep.
To make the effort to shut me down is just kind of silly.
Didn't waste any time. Got on that phone.
Henry, have you figured out your problem with BitChute? Can you get stuff up at BitChute now or what?
Yes, I have. Okay. And I wanted to ask you, Jim, how do I take that 4-hour meeting of City Council and just trim?
Well, You have to edit it.
Do I have to bring the whole video in?
I mean, no. Okay, here's the deal. I already put it up on my site. I have your – I did it. So all you got to do is download it.
Okay.
So when you go to my site, click on the video, right-click it, and then hit download. It should download. You should have it to upload to your site.
Okay.
I just like to know
the techniques to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I can do all, anytime you have that, just send it to me, because I'm going to put it on my site.
Yeah.
So I'll do all the work for you. I'll edit it, cut it out, put your part in, which I did, and then you just download it, put it on your site, and you're all set.
Or you can just take the URL if you want.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and I've always said my whole life, I guess, the Boy Scout motto was be prepared, and my motto was always be near a Boy Scout. So Jim will be my Boy Scout on this one.
That's being prepared.
If Jim is prepared, then I'll just be near Jim.
There you go.
Yeah, I can do any editing, whatever you need for the editing.
Yeah. So,
I appreciate it, you guys.
Okay, Henry. Well, thank you for being on, and we'll hopefully we can hear what's going on next week. If you have something going on, you can tell us about that, okay?
I'll put you guys in my calendar.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Take care now. Bye-bye.
Okay. Do we have somebody else? Was somebody else wanted to come in on the discussion here? Because someone made a comment about something.
Yeah. No, Diana says no. A central control was having an issue with this iPhone. We're not surprised. Jim and I are not big fans of iPhones. We don't know how to move or get rid of the live clock counter. It's right over Jim's face. Not that that's
why is that a problem?
That's what he said. That might not be a problem. You can still hear. That's the point. You can still hear us.
Okay, so he's not on anywhere to come in.
No,
so
we don't right.
All right, so I don't know if there's anybody else coming in or not. That's fine, whatever. We'll move on with the discussion, okay?
Right.
Okay, let's get into some of the okay, let's talk about this. Good, good. I have a couple things I put up, links I wanted to talk about. This is one of them. This had to do with the George Floyd case, and I think this is interesting how everybody's got to jump in here. You know, on the situation, and this guy did it too. So what happened with the George Floyd case, I don't know if anybody remember the video, but there was a guy right across from George Floyd. I think he was videotaping it, but I can't remember, but he was showing what was going on, and he feels that he got post-traumatic
stress disorder.
Right. Because he's getting a lot of flack for him giving his opinion of what happened. So he feels he's being picked on, and because he's being picked on and people are saying things about him bad, he's now, you know, got these mental problems because of being there and telling his story. So what does he do? He sues. He sues Minneapolis, okay, city council, and they actually given him $150,000. Can you imagine them doing this? Yeah. See, victimhood. The blacks, they're jumping on this victimhood wagon, and now everybody's a victim. Everybody's a victim. You know, they want to sue you, they want to do this because you said something they didn't like and you hurt the feelings, and he's walking away there with the $150,000. And they didn't even have debated. They said, okay, fine, we're going to give it to you. So they're still pushing this nonsense about George Floyd. Okay, because, you know, everybody, they believe it, and they think that whatever happened there, that was Chauvin guy was trying to kill him, or he killed him. And, you know, anyway, that's where we stand on that discussion there. I just think it's disgusting. Well,
the anniversary of that crap is coming up, isn't it?
I guess, yeah. So anyway, I just can't believe that this stuff can happen. But again, you know, I don't know what is going on with these people. Well, I know what's going on. Everybody wants victimhood. The blacks want victimhood because of slavery. The Jews want victimhood because of the Holocaust. And now we got the Catholics. The Catholics want victimhood. I talked about that, I think, today in our show, in our walk and talk today. But I'll talk about it now. And what happened was, I don't have the clip here, but There's a new movie coming out, okay? The Jews, you know, every year they got movies coming out about the Holocaust. I mean, this is the way it is. And they've had four. This will be the fourth one this year, I guess. And this is called, I keep forgetting the woman's name.
Ilona, Irina?
Ilona or whatever.
I thought you said Irina.
Ilona. What's that?
I thought you said Irina.
No, it's not Irina.
Well, that's what you said in the email you sent.
Diane, I don't know what the name of the. I keep forgetting what it is.
Irina's Vow.
What is it?
You said Irina's Vow.
Okay, keep going down.
Tells an overly. Oh, no, it's
not. I don't have it on my site. It was in the walk and talk.
Right.
Okay, but it's also. If you do a search, it's not Irina. It's Ilona or something like that.
Well, you put Irina.
No, it's not Irina. I know it's not Irina, but unless it's.
Is it about more Catholic Church nonsense? You said more victimhood.
Yes.
We're seeing the Catholic Church has now replaced Jews as victims, the Jews as victims. I'm sure more Catholic victims will come along with
it. What's the name of the movie?
You said Irina's Vow.
Okay. Can you think you can do a search for that, Diana? A search for that video. I don't really think that's the name of it, but
well, that's what you put, and you also you Irina's Vow tells an overly simplistic tale about the Holocaust, and it's a movie. And
are you reading? What are you?
I'm reading off the article.
Oh, okay. It is. How does it spell the name?
Irena.
Okay, so it's Irina. Look at. I thought it was something else, but if that's okay. What it is, that's what it is. Okay.
It talks about the four major films about the Holocaust.
I mean, if you wanted to get that video up, you could play it. It's not a lot. It's only like 1 minute, 2 minutes. But the point I'm trying to make about all this is the Catholic Church is now jumping in to the sway of victimhood. And Catholics now are coming out with their stories of nonsense. What up? What do we got here?
I just had a chance to see a private screening of Irina's Vow.
That's it. Just as
a Catholic nurse in Poland,
please be louder.
Who risked her life to save 12 Jews?
Because we can't hear it.
A true story of courage and humanity. And as a Holocaust journalist, obviously, you know how important it is to me.
Fake box.
The movie was so well done. The acting was amazing. If you have any questions about it, write in the comments below. Ask me anything you want or shoot me a DM. Also, click on the link in my bio to purchase tickets or see where it's playing in theaters near you. I hope you enjoy it as much as I do.
Yeah, it's so much fun. I'm so happy that you're going to make some more money off of this.
Well, the problem is the Catholic Church now is jumping in on the victimhood status. Now they're going to start getting their movies up. With Catholic people that, you know, were saving Jews or whatever they're doing. And, I mean, to me, it's all bullshit. I mean, you know, they're just, you know, I think they make
it's just a grift. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's never getting in. And of course, I blame Michael Jones for this.
Yeah.
You know, he's a big guy who wants to promote the Catholic Church as being victims of the Holocaust. That he's actually replacing the Jews. That's what he's trying to do with his narrative. He's trying to say the Catholics were prosecuted.
In this one, they're the heroes. The Catholics are the heroes because they were hiding some Jews.
Yeah. It's just amazing, you know. What are you going to do? I mean, the Catholic Church, the Catholic people are just going to get sucked along just like everybody else, like the Jews and everybody else. And, I don't know. It's just it's never gonna end. All the nonsense and crap that's gonna come up and
can't get big bucks.
You know, yeah, next thing you know, the blacks will have some black Holocaust survivor, you know, which again blacks had nothing to do with it at all over there. I don't even know if they were in the camps. But you know, one of these days we're gonna get a black that says they were in the camp or they were hiding the Jews.
Yeah, I find that hard to believe.
Well, I'm just saying, you never know. Everybody's gonna have you're gonna be a victim
because it's
Jim, there had to be a black guy in the Holocaust. Don't you know why? Because who taught Irene Zitzblatt how to moonwalk out of a gas chamber?
Backwards. I get it.
Yeah. Right. Oh yeah, I was going backwards. And it sucks because we can't talk to anybody about this stuff to give the right story. And it's like they could say whatever they want to say about it, and it's just crazy stuff. All right, what is this?
Little lies.
Yeah, I hear you. Okay. All right. My allergies are kicking up. I hate to say it, but
just in time for it to rain again.
All right, horrible. All right, let's. We don't have anybody in the queue tonight. Nobody's there wanting to jump in. Huh? Wow, that's amazing. That means I'm going to have to do more talking.
Another video.
All right. Well, we can go to my videos and we can start talking about my videos. And wait a minute. Let's go to the article. Do I have any more articles that we can talk about? Because I know I had a couple. I thought it, but okay. We should wait after 9. Okay, we can do that after 9.
You know about the the Second Amendment case in Brooklyn?
No, go ahead, tell us.
Some guy was building firearms in his own home, and now he risks being put away for 18 years, and the judge famously said, the Second Amendment doesn't exist in my courtroom.
Wow.
So they're trying to pull an end run. Guys, they're never going to stop shooting your guns. I mean, it's just insane.
They're giving guns
to the migrants, right? They're teaching the migrants how to get guns from people. But Americans can't get them. It's just nonsense.
Wow. Yeah, they're really pushing this gun stuff. But it's okay for the criminals to have the guns. You know, they can have them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, this is not fine. Well, I'm at the gun shows like this. You know, they're giving them special instructions online. It's crazy.
Wow. Yeah, we're going to see more stuff happen with that. And it will be interesting to see if Trump gets in, you know, wins, because he's not for the guns as much as you might think.
He's not a gun. His idea of gun rights is let the government take away the guns and hash it out in court.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll have to deal with that, that nonsense with him if he gets in. Or whoever gets in, whatever. Doesn't matter who gets in.
No, that's right.
They're all the same. They're all creeps. They're all liars. And, the kitty wants to be on TV, Miss Diana.
Yeah. Poopy head.
Where's the other ones? Where's the little ones?
They're sleeping still.
Oh, okay.
They won't be now that she's up.
Yeah, they'll be running around. Okay. All right. Okay, this central control guy, he's been putting stuff up, but I can't read it. It goes by too fast.
Let's see. Well, he says that, the first one. Okay, he got the timer square off of your face. And he put, tell me lies, tell me sweet lies, is in response to the Fleetwood Mac song. He says, EMJ got mad at me. He said, everyone comes from Adam and Eve. So I asked him, well, who are the people Cain was afraid of? Which is why God put a mark on him. I never got an answer from him, just sarcasm. How about we don't know all the answers? We'll just tell you what the Bible says and you can, you know, take it up with God. I don't know. I don't know where Cain came from, except there was a timing issue between the time of the birth of Cain and Abel and before that somewhat, and then after that, a lot of things may have happened. We don't know the answer. We're not going to claim to. And it would have helped if EMJ says, still learning. That'd have been okay.
Well, the problem with Michael Jones, he doesn't like criticism. You know, you can't take him up on anything. He just, he's a smart ass.
He's sarcastic, yeah.
He's very sarcastic.
Yeah.
And then when you show him facts, he doesn't look at the facts that you're presenting.
Yeah.
He's on a one-way ticket on what he wants to present, and that's how he does it. I mean,
like your list, the list that we had of invented Catholic things from 300 to 1965, and in 1500s, they made the scripture of equal value and the validity as the Catholic Church tradition. Okay, now I would have, that's obviously not scriptural, among other things in that. You presented all the information to which he said to you, what are you, being the Pope now?
Yeah.
Couldn't even discuss it.
Yeah, well, it bothers me when you're trying to get an answer with something and then somebody goes off on something else that has nothing to do with the situation. And, I don't know. They're just avoiding what really is going on. You know, what can I say?
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, we're going to move on to another subject, and I might just take the break now. So let's take our break here. We're going to take the break, our break here. We're going to get into the Bundy Tree Publishing, the books. Oh, they got a new book up. What is that book? I haven't seen that book. What's that book about?
Siege.
Yeah. Anybody know?
The official anthology of what?
That's great. I'll tell you that.
I can't read it.
National Social Liberation Front. Well, it sounds interesting, but still don't know what it's about.
Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, there's a new book on their site. And we have all the other ones there, too, all the other good ones.
Which are?
6 Million Factor Fictions there, Europa. You get Europa DVDs. So,
David Duke's Jewish Supremacy.
Yeah. All the good books are there. So all you folks, if you want to get these books, The Great Impersonation, okay. I don't know. Is that new, too? I don't remember.
It's been there.
Okay. So Jews of the Problem, I have it right back here. Exposing the Lies, I have right here, too. That's really good. And we got the great DVDs. The best DVDs are right here. If you need really good DVDs, you can get them here. And let's see what else. And you get to, I think he's still running the 10% off if you say hoax or something. I don't know.
Diana, is he still doing the sale? Apparently yeah. so. You yeah. use the promo code hoax to get 10% off of any of the purchases.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, there's some really good stuff. You know, probably some of the best books. Yeah. If you really, those two books, the 6 Million Fact of Fiction and The Myth of German Villainy, those two books, those are the only two books you really need if you really want to refute everything about the Jews. Just those two books right there will do it.
And World War II and the Third Reich.
Yep. Those will do it just right there. So anyway, you can take a look at that site if you want. So that's Money Tree Publishing. And they're doing a hell of a good job getting information out. We appreciate what they're doing. And good luck. I hope they can really get people to see what these books are about, you know. All right.
Bless Dave Gahary and Paul English. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. We're moving on. Let's we're going to move on to something different now. A little different topic. We have talked about this topic before. If Diana wants to bring the article up about, it has to do with the Boston Marathon, actually. And it just kind of hit me today, yesterday, actually, I saw the article that was published. Some woman is writing a book, she wrote a book. Okay. Let's see. Is this it? Okay. The government is wrong. How in 2011, Waltham triple homicide would be for a tie at the Boston Marathon. Well, this is a big problem here. All right. Because they're trying to tie in a triple murder that happened in Boston right around this time period, okay? Well, actually, I think the murder happened a couple of years before, right? If it's 2011, the Boston Marathon didn't happen
right.
in 2013. Right? Yeah.
Right.
Okay. But anyway, so this woman, Susan Zalkind, I would think she's a Jew. All right, that sounds like a Jew name to me, but whatever. She's a journalist. So she's writing a book, okay? If you could scroll down, I could take a look at what she wrote here, or what whoever wrote the article. We can see what they have to say. So the government is wrong. Okay, so they're trying to tie in this murder with the Tsama brothers. I don't even know how to say the last name, but whatever. And, of course, one of them was killed, and the other one was, you know, put in jail. And that's kind of an odd situation there because I don't understand how they can, you know, put people in jail and these people can't have visitors. They can't talk to anybody. I just don't understand how this can happen, but it happens. But these are the three guys that supposedly were killed, violently killed. And they want you to believe that the Boston Marathon fellows here, all right, the Sarnoff brothers, were responsible for the killing. I guess that's what she's trying to say, right? That's what she's trying to say. Of course, these guys are Jews. So there you go. You're bringing that the Jewish element into it. And that's a good point. Who the hell knows if the – well, first of all, we don't even know what's going on. They claim that the older brother was killed, okay? And then they obviously the other one, they say he went on trial, he went to prison. Who the hell knows if he's in prison? We don't see him. No one's talking to him, right? We just have to go by what they say. It's funny. All these people, just like Epstein, Oh yeah, he went to, you know, went to jail. He's in prison and he killed himself. Okay, yeah, I gotta believe that too. Everybody's got something to say here. So I don't know. I really don't know what's going on, but this whole case is such a screwball case. First of all, the whole Boston Marathon thing was just a scam, just a fake, whatever you want to call it.
It
was a psyop. I mean, the whole thing. I think these brothers, you know, they got set up into something. They didn't even know what the hell was going on. They got set up in this. And now they have this thing with they're murdering the guys, those three guys too. They're trying to bring that into it. And then people are going to believe that nonsense. But it even goes back even crazier because there's something that happened. Again, a lot of people don't even know about this. But it has to do with a cop being murdered. All right. And this, I don't know if Diana has any links to anything dealing with this or an article dealing with this, but there was a cop, his name was Collier. And one of the brothers, I don't know if one of them, but both of them was there that day. They were walking through the MIT campus and they claim, I think they want you to believe that those brothers shot the cop. That's what I think they want you to believe because there was a cop parked in the MIT campus. And he ended up being shot or killed or whatever. And they're trying to, again, he was the cop. But this is a whole nother wacko story, what happened here. Because when you investigate this guy was involved, as far as I understand it, Diana knows more about it than me, I think. But anyway, he was involved with some police corruption. All right, going on. I forgot what police place he was in, what town. Cambridge, was it? I really don't. I don't remember. But anyway, so Sean Collier was involved with exposing some police corruption. Diana, did you want to
check? I have to jump in, huh?
Yeah, go ahead.
Excuse me. So Officer Sean Collier, who worked for the MIT police at the time that he was executed, and I do have that video and I can show you in a second, but he was trying to get on the police force in Somerville and he worked there for 5 years. I believe he worked in the IT department. So Sean Collier had actually filed a complaint against the mayor of Somerville, Joe Coterone, corrupt as the day is long. And he filed something because a complaint because he and other people were getting bypassed in the civil, I think it was the civil service exam. And he filed a complaint. What I wonder is if in fact he worked for the IT department, what information did he have? This, I think he was 27 years old when he was executed and I have the video, I'll pull it up. But let me just go back to that triple murder. I just pulled up an article from the Daily Beast from, I think it was April 20th. This woman, it's so interesting when you see the article from the Daily Beast. These three guys, from what I understand, were drug dealers. They were drug dealers and they were beheaded. So I don't know how these two guys pulled that off. Now, they're trying to say, this woman is trying to say that both of these two guys participated in this torture of these three men, young men who were drug dealers. But what I had read is that one of the guys, not Tamerlan Zanayev, he was supposedly the one that was in there by himself. But I think this journalist is saying that they both did it. But after they were murdered, they were sprinkled with the marijuana, which if somebody wants to chime in here.
the money, too. I thought they said that it wasn't a robbery because there was money all over the place.
Something wasn't right. It wasn't. This was not Tamerlan chopping, you know, beheading three guys.
Right.
In the Waltham, Massachusetts apartment.
Right.
So let me just show you the video. I just want to pull up the video. Is there somebody else just hopped in? If you guys want to make comments, Okay, so here's the video, Jim, that I think we watched about, what, 2 years ago or something? Okay. So this is the jury saw this video, and this is supposedly the Zaniyev brothers ambushing MIT police officer Sean Collier.
Okay.
So hold on a second. And
he was parked right next to the building.
You'll see him drive up. Yeah. So let's just watch this.
New surveillance video just released in the Marathon bombing trial from the night the Tsarnaev brothers ambushed and killed MIT police officer Sean Collier. News 7/5's Kelly Tuthill was inside the courtroom for today's testimony. And Kelly, can you tell who pulled the trigger?
No, you can't really make out who the suspects are. You don't see any flashes of anything happening. The only indication of a problem, really, is the brake lights go on and off. But the Collier family asked that that part of it be edited out, so we were not provided that part of the video. Either way, prosecutors say both brothers are responsible for this murder.
Now watch
this. New surveillance video from MIT cameras shows two people emerge from the right of your screen. They walk around the Koch Institute on campus to the left side. There sits an unsuspecting MIT police officer, Sean Collier, in his cruiser. The camera distance, even on a zoom-in, makes it impossible to see who fires the multiple shots that will take the 27-year-old's life. MIT.
So I just want to go back to that video so you can watch this. So if you look, I'm just going to pause it. So up here on the right-hand corner, what people probably don't know is there's a street that goes that way. I don't know if you can tell.
You can see it. Yeah.
Right? So there's a street that goes that way. And Collier, came up in another video. You could see him drive up here, and he pulls over here. Now, these two guys... supposedly, right, they walk down here, they go across the front of the building, right to him, they shoot him, and then they go back this way. Come on. So
right.
what it looks like, Uncle Murray, chime in, somebody executed Sean Collier and then used these guys as a scapegoat, and anybody could have... in the police department, MIT, anybody could have told him to go there. You know what I mean? And set him up. So let's just watch this again and see where they go. And there are better videos than this. This is the only video from MIT. So look at this. Right? So they round the corner. They round the corner. You're telling me they round the corner and they go to him? And supposedly they try to get his gun out of the holster, but they already had a gun. They executed him. This was an execution. And in my opinion, those two guys, whoever those people are not the ones that...
They're not the Tsarnaev brothers. Right, okay. So that's the whole question. Those two guys, they want you to believe they're this Tsarnaev brothers. Right, that's what they want you to believe, and this is ridiculous. You know, this is crazy. So what seems to have happened now, Diane? Wasn't there something about another? Okay, the police car came in later that basically investigated it or whatever. But like I said, I really think he was executed by the cops.
He was executed by somebody,
right?
And it wasn't the Zaniyev brothers.
That's right. So
it was not.
Again, you know, when you look at the Boston Marathon, you know, you're only looking at one aspect of it, something happening. There's more to the, you know, there's always something else going on. They're using that as a diversion to get you to look at the Boston Marathon when they're doing something else, or they have something else they want to get done under the guise of the Boston Marathon. So to me, again, I don't know anything about this, but here's what it seems like to me. It seems like this kid knew something. All right. He knew something that was going on. It might have even had something to do with the Boston Marathon. I don't know. I really don't know.
Which kid? I think
the cop in the Collier.
Officer Collier. I think he was only 27. What's interesting, and somebody put in the chat, MIT is a CIA Mossad hotspot. Absolutely, I agree with that. Somebody else in the chat said the Boston bombing was fake as it gets. I agree with that as well. And yes, the Zanaya brothers supposedly were Muslim. They were Chechen. And I agree, it's another event blamed on Muslim terrorism. I've watched a lot of video from video footage. You can go to BitChute and just put in the Boston Marathon. And there are videos of somebody that looks like Steven Spielberg. There are videos where you can clearly see that there are people directing the victims on the ground.
Right.
So, but it is interesting what you said, Jim, is that when they have an event like this, they can do multiple other things, like execute Sean Collier, who probably knew way too much about what was going on in Somerville, in the Somerville Police Department. Because,
well, have you ever thought of it that the whole thing could have been about the Somerville Police Department using this, the Boston Marathon, to cover it up?
Well, it's possible, but the other thing to think about is that what they did, because I was living in Cambridge at the time, what they did is they locked everybody down.
Yeah, that was boss.
It was a test run, in my opinion, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So they locked everyone down. Where the supposed bombs went off, I'm pulling information from the archives of my brain. There's some sort of medical organization that is on Boylston Street, not far from where one of the bombs went off. Partners in Health. I think that's what it's called. In Health.
Yeah.
And they have Paul Farmer, I believe. He was the doctor that started that organization, or has a lot to do with that organization. He was a physician out of the Brigham and Women's Hospital and did a lot of, and if you could see me, you could see the air quotes about HIV and drug resistant tuberculosis in like Peru and Russia, Haiti, I think. Something doesn't fit there. And here's another comment. Yes, Kraft International was involved big time in the Boston bombing. And correct me if I'm wrong, Eric Hoy, Kraft International was the organization started by Chris Kyle. And Uncle Murray, do you remember who Chris Kyle is?
I sure do. Who's
Chris Kyle?
Chris Kyle is one of the snipers.
Yes.
Yes,
so Jim, I don't know if you're, and Miss Diane, Chris Kyle, I think there was a book written, I have it somewhere in my house, I think it was called American Sniper.
Yeah, there was a movie.
Yep.
Was that a movie?
Boom.
Yes, and what's interesting about that is that his firm, was he already dead at that point, Uncle Murray? Had he already been...
I'm trying to remember the timing.
I thought he was already dead, but there's a contract company. They were boots on the ground, Jim and Diane, at the Boston Marathon. You can see them. So, and Chris Kyle, if you go back to what happened to him, allegedly, he and another gentleman took some PTSD depressed guy to the gun range because they were trying to help him out. And this is the story. Chris Kyle and his friend walked downrange to put up new targets or something, and left the guy with a gun, this, you know, guy with PTSD, and he shot them dead.
Oh, okay.
That's not what happened. We know that's a bunch of bunk, but.
Right, right.
Anyway, so that's the story. But I just want to show you this last thing.
Right before. February 2nd is when he passed.
Ah,
okay, so right before it. Yeah.
2013.
Right.
So 2013, yep. Chris Kyle gets executed. And I don't know if anybody remembers this. His wife, I can't remember her name, Tanya or something. Tanya, she had been interviewed on Fox in the Morning, whatever that show was called. I can't remember what it was called. And they were basically trying her out as like a host. She didn't last very long. So here's another, Iroquois says, yes, they had backpacks with fake blood because there was no blood. And there's so much video of this, but, TW says, I heard he shot them dead while sitting in the back seat. Now, isn't that interesting? I had the story that they went downrange, but TW saying that they were in the truck, and anything's possible. But let's just go back to this, Jim, so you can see this. So the title of this, Mystery Woman at the Heart of an Unsolved Triple Murder, right? So they're reviving this while they revive all the hoax stuff.
Yeah.
So they make them out to be all these bad, right? They're all bad. This one right here, that's Tamerlan, right here down the bottom. This is the friend, I think. I think he was the one that they said allegedly beheaded these guys, right? So what they're saying is, so 18 months before the Zanaya brothers carried out the Boston bombing, Tamerlan, the old one, murdered three young men in Waltham on, imagine this, September 11th, 2011. Yeah. Imagine that.
Yeah.
That's an interesting day, huh? Probably no significance with that. So he was a boxer, and they're saying that the guy that did it with him was Ibrahim Tadeshev, and they knew each other from the gym. So they supposedly pistol-whipped, hog-tied, and tortured these three guys, all Jews, stole their money and slit their throats. Okay, that's what they're saying that they did. And what did they do, walk out of the apartment all bloody? So now look at this. The victims were marijuana dealers. They weren't drug dealers. They were marijuana dealers. And what's interesting about that is that 10 years ago, marijuana was not legal, right? Look at this. They had gathered to watch a Sunday night football game, right? Brendan had a purple belt in jiu-jitsu. He went to the same gym as Tamerlan. The other one, let's say, lived in Waltham. He came from an Israeli family. Sound of violins, and was the son of a local Jewish spiritual leader. The third victim was a mild-mannered cannabis connoisseur. Imagine that.
Wow.
They were drug dealers.
Yeah.
Drug dealers. So, anyway, it's just interesting how this is all being revitalized.
Yeah, well, that's my question. Why are they doing this? Why is this happening?
Because they're Jewish. That's why.
Right. Well, no, I that's what it seems to me. It seems like this Jewish thing, you know, they always get, the Jews always make themselves look good with no matter what happens. There's always some good side of the Jew side, no matter what happens. So here's these three guys, three drug dealers, but now they're good guys, you know.
Yep. Look at this. They're a cannabis connoisseur.
Oh, boy.
Cannabis connoisseur.
Yeah, that's like calling a bank robber, what do you call it? Money withdrawal specialist.
Right, exactly.
Banknote specialist. Exactly. Yeah, banknote specialist.
Yeah. So they're probably not, look at this, Aradisi. They had high grade black mark cannabis. I have no idea what that is. What does that mean? Black high grade black mark cannabis. Anybody know what that is?
Black market.
It says black mark. Oh, market. I'm sorry. Black market. What is high grade?
Well, it was a good marijuana.
That's probably expensive.
Yeah.
It probably wasn't laced with anything dangerous.
It was a good stuff, you know?
Yeah. Somebody just hop in. Anyway, that's the story. Somebody just hopped
in. Well, anyway, this whole thing, not that I want to get in the Boston Marathon, it's just amazing how everything is tied in with nonsense. And it's like, but the biggest thing to remember, what I'm trying to get my point, is Collier being murdered is a whole nother story, okay, that was covered up with the Boston Marathon. That's all I'm trying to say. So that was somebody knew about this Boston Marathon going on, and they knew that they're going to cover it up, the murder of him, with nobody noticing it, because everybody's going to put their attention to the Boston Marathon, to Samus Brothers and all that. No one's going to think anything else. And this is, I think, exactly what happened. My opinion, I could be wrong. I don't know. I'm just saying that guy Collier, he knew something. You know, that he was probably killed by the cops or somebody involved with the mayor or whatever the hell was going on that he knew. This guy knew something.
You couldn't identify the two alleged perpetrators of this. Right. That distance, that shadowing, that lighting. And that's why that person probably put Fessor, said, talked to their aunt. She said that was not
them in the pictures. How could anybody even see Miss Diane? But here's what's who.
That's what I'm saying.
Regardless of who those two people were in that video that we watched,
yeah,
they made a beeline for him.
Like they knew where he was. How would they have known?
If it were those guys, yeah, how would they have known? And yeah, why? What would possess them? They already had a gun. So what motive would they have to go in and kill him? So,
well, here's another thing to think about. Let's say you're on the run, right? They're on the run. That's what they're doing, right? They're getting away from something, right? These guys, two brothers. You're going to walk up to a police car?
Right. And why would you stay in Cambridge?
Right. That's the last place you're going to go is up to a cop car parked on the side of the road. So you're telling me you're on the run. You're trying to get the hell out of Dodge. But wait a minute. We're going to go up to that cop car and shoot that cop. I don't think that's going to happen.
And how would they know he was there?
How did they know he was there? Well, he went down one.
That's the whole point.
So suspicious.
The more questions you answer, the more questions you have.
Yeah. Well,
it's just terrible. This young 27. I think it was 27. Just
that's what it said. That's
terrible. About, you know, nobody wants to look at this stuff, right? I tried talking to somebody a couple of years ago, somebody that was running for mayor or something in Somerville. And I tried to talk to him about it. And, you know, nobody wants to look at the fact that Sean Collier worked in Somerville I believe it was the IT department. Hello. Right?
You should send an email to that woman writing that book or whatever and saying, have you ever looked at this?
Yeah. No, Collier isn't anything that Collier last name isn't nothing she wanted to.
Right. Well, no, it's like I think you missed something. Yeah, in your research. I don't think you're looking in the right spot for what the heck's going on here. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
There you go.
The last point I want to make is important because that whole thing was just another way they could show how they can lock down something with something. You see, this was unconstitutional what they did. Yep. Going into people's homes and searching their homes, and then if you said no, they might have shot you.
Yeah, they could have. Yeah.
They could have shot you. They could have said, well, you were cooperating and we shot you because
resisting arrest or
they weren't being arrested. But
that's a minor point.
No, but the point is they thought they had free reign to do whatever the hell they wanted to do.
Well, they did.
And they did it. Okay. And again, a lot of people probably don't know this part of it, but another stupid part of it was when they found him in the boat. Remember?
Oh, I know.
He's in the boat.
That wasn't just set up. And he wrote all kinds of stuff on the inside.
And they shot him in the boat, and he got shot in the neck, and you don't see any wound in his neck after. You know what I mean? In other words, that was a whole nother story they made up, you know, bullshit story.
Why wasn't he dead if he got shot in the neck?
Oh, it went on and on, the nonsense of the whole thing. But again, people are so stupid They just don't look into anything. They don't research it. They don't say, what the hell? The boat that he was shot in isn't even the boat they showed. Oh, goodness. It's just nonsense. Everything is just crazy. But they get away with it because no one questions it. And whatever they present in the news, that's what gets presented. And there you go. It's all been written. Nobody cares anymore. No one, you know, until the next crazy thing that happens, we'll have to deal with that. That's all. But do we have somebody that wants to come in?
We're all on there.
Okay. Come on in, whoever wants to come in.
John from Wilmington. You have
John. Julie, oh, John.
Sheckelheim.
Yeah, John. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Jim. Hey. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, Diana.
Greetings, John.
Hey, Diane. Hey, Uncle Murray.
Hey, John. How you doing, brother?
Hey, I want to make a comment about that Chris Kyle. Well, he brings up a lot of stuff from the past. I think I heard before that he did not want to have his security team have anything to do with the Boston Marathon. I think it was the Boston Marathon. And that's one of the reasons why he was assassinated.
Interesting.
So just a story. I mean, like you just said that, you know, he was murdered right before the Boston bombing took effect. So there might be some truth to that. It's something okay. I heard from the past. And also around the same time, if you remember, the New England Patriots had a tight end, a football player. Isn't that his name? Hernandez? And then he caught up in some kind of crazy murder scandal.
Yep.
Like that was like the same time as the Boston bombing, if my memory serves me correct.
Aaron Hernandez?
Aaron, yeah, that's it.
Aaron Hernandez. And he was a tight end, right?
Yes.
And he had some connections to Florida, right? I think he went to jail. He murdered somebody and then supposedly he killed himself, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He got killed in jail.
I think he killed himself, right?
Yeah, yes.
But the story.
Allegedly. Yeah.
He supposedly had cameras in his house, and that's how he got caught because the murder took place at his residence, and the home security cameras had it. Matter of fact, he tried destroying all his home security cameras. That was one of the things that got him.
Yeah, that was 2013 as well.
Yeah, some crazy stuff there.
It's kind of interesting, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, something there is sending off some red flags. But who knows? Maybe they're not connected, but seems awful strange. But also, I wanted to ask, hey, Uncle Murray, do you have like a regular radio show? I see on your channel there's Pirate Radio.
That's WPRPN. It comes on, it's in Korea. It's simulcast in Korea and a bunch of other places. It's here at 11 o'clock on Tuesday nights and sometimes Fridays.
Oh, and you're a regular guest host on that show?
For the most part. I missed last week, but yeah.
Okay.
But it's good.
Thanks. I wasn't aware that you were like a regular radio podcaster. It's cool, man. Good deal.
Oh, I'm a peg leg pirate, baby.
Take a look at this comment in the chat. I'm coming back as a cat to Diane's house.
Yeah. Diane, what's all the kittens bothering you?
The mom and the one that looks like her are kind of out and about doing things. So just kind of keeping an eye on them. But you know, when they chew cords, they get corrected.
Oh, yeah, right.
There you go. Hey, one more question for you guys, Jim in particular. Yep. Which one of the Hall of Hoax liars do you think takes the cake the most? I mean, that one you put up the other day, you put a video up, and that one old lady was saying they stuck a nail on her head.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're all bad.
Crazy.
I mean, you can't. The one that I really liked the best was Hannah. What's her face? Hannah. Her last name is Hannah. I can't remember. Anyway, she's the one that
sausage lady.
Yeah, I call her sausage lady. She's the one that said that they made sausage meats out of the Jews. They made leather
purses,
goods,
luggage,
purses. Yeah, Yeah.
Leather goods. Like the Germans couldn't find something better. The Germans are experts at making sausage. Do you think they'd use crap for their sausages?
I think Irene Zizblatt, I think that one takes the cake. Oh my God.
She's good too, but I mean she just had one topic was the diamonds, swallowing the diamonds. But Hannah, the other woman, I can't remember her name. She's out of her mind. I mean, she's talking about all these things the Jews are doing. I mean, the Germans are doing to the Jews. You know, like there was a factory of just making pots out of them, making leather goods and belts and wallets and purses and everything else. You know,
Rachel Hannon,
yes.
Well, yeah, right.
Baloney lady.
You said to me, yeah. I wrote up here with diamonds in your skirt, in the hem of your skirt. And if you don't have enough to eat, those are to buy bread. Oh. The whole time I was in the camp through the experiment, every time I was selected, I swallowed the diamonds. So every time I swallowed them, I had to find them again. We were allowed to go to the latrine once a day. And I never sat in the hole because I had to go and find my diamonds. And one day, the SS woman walked by the door and she saw me in the corner. And I already had the diamonds in the hand. And usually I was waiting until on the way back, I would rinse them off like in the mud or if there was no mud in the soup that we were going to get next. But I had no time and I had to swallow them.
I think that was Mangala that took me out of there.
Of course it was.
And he just attached me to that gypsy priesthood and I went to the gas chamber.
Yeah.
And as I was going into the gas chamber, everybody was being pushed into the gas chamber. And I was going backwards. Somehow I was being pushed backwards.
The moonwalk.
And I was like stuck in the door. And I don't know.
That's for sure.
Irene the moonwalker. Oh my God. Oh well. Well.
A smooth criminal.
Not a lie. It was in my mind.
It was Misha DeFonseca.
Yeah. Yeah, these people are, nobody questions these people. Nobody says this is nonsense.
Or how about, let me get this. Anybody say to them, okay, let me understand this.
Right. I think they got a lot of shekels for that, man. Hey, there's a new show on Speak Free Radio, the Davis Lerman Show, and he's been killing it. And I think it was last night or the night before. I think it was last night. He was saying, like, the minimum payment for the reparations is $3,400 a month. Getting, and something that's just the minimum. He said some of them are getting $5,000 and $6,000 a month. Unreal.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't hear it was that much, but they got a monthly check. I mean, what are you going to do? You know. They're ripping everybody off with the stories, and people believe, and they're continually going to get this money. They're never going to shut them off until the last one's dead. And then after that, they're going to give the kids. The kids will get the money.
That's
the
right.
The king of the grifters. That's what all this money for Ukraine and money for Israel. I mean, how much grifting are all these people? Oh, my God. They're just.
That's right. Exactly.
My baloney has the first name. It's O-S-C-A-R. My baloney has a second name. It's M-A-Y-E-R. Oh, I love to eat it every day. And if you ask me, I'll say. Cause Oscar Mayer has a way with B-O-L-O-G-N-A. How's that?
Pretty good. But here's another thing. Germans are going to eat their sausage with sauerkraut. And I didn't hear anybody talking about sauerkraut.
Yeah, right.
Oscar Mayer sounds Jewish.
It may be.
Yeah.
All right, y'all. I'm going to let you go. I see you got somebody else in the green room.
So. All right, let's see if they want to come in.
Have a good one.
All right. Good night.
All right, John. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, who do we got else that wants to make a comment or whatever?
Well, this is
Oy vey, so much anti-Semitism in here. I can't take it. It's awful.
Well, why are you here then?
It's CB. I just Shmuley Ben Shackelheim is one of my alter egos that I like to use from time to time. So
this is supposed to be the Rachel Hannon story.
After a few weeks, they take you to the showers. To the showers, they give you a small bar of soap when you enter, and you go to the showers. In the ceiling, you know, there were, you know, sometimes it was water coming through, sometimes it was gas. So now we were entering this knowing, because sometimes we could die, sometimes we can come back alive. And before entering, no towels or anything, they will give you a bar of soap. In this bar of soap, there were three initials in German. That I forgot how to pronounce in German, but it means pure Jewish fat into the soap. It meant that they were making the soap out of the corpse of the living. They make the soaps. They were making out of the corpse of the living many things. They will make, you know, that parchment to make that to the lampshades. They will make, you know, purses for them, for the skin of the dead people. They will make beautiful skins, you know, like purses for the Germans. They will make anything. And then the flesh, you know, they were sometimes, you know, when they burn, if they were not burned, they will use it for to make sausages and to make, you know, polony that they were giving us at night to eat. It was, you know, like you say, at the beginning, we were very kosher, as you say, in Rhode Island. We didn't want to touch polony, not even knowing that it was human. We thought it was from the cow. But then, you know, my father, when at the beginning, 40 days, we will see the men, you know, from the other side of the fence. They were electric barbed, you know, wire. And then my father, that he was very well, he knew very well, you know, the Hebrew and all these laws and all this. He told us in Hebrew, Dina Malchuta Dina, which means the law of the government is a law. So if you don't eat, you'll starve and you'll die. So God knows that. So don't forget about kashrut and everything. Eat whatever they give you. So at the beginning, you know, we didn't want to, even that we knew that, but we didn't want to touch that polony. But after that, never mind, you know, we ate anything they will give us.
Now my baloney goyim is kosher.
Yeah, right.
Insane. Absolutely guys, insane.
CB, what do you got for us?
Well, no, I was just going to I was waiting for you guys to finish up before Diane. I don't know, Diane, I guess, wasn't letting anybody in. I was going to say about that thing you were talking about, the Boston bombing. That was clearly a professional hit with those two guys walking through. That wasn't the Sarnia brothers. And most likely this was a CIA thing. And the Chechens are all with the CIA, and then, of course, the FBI's involved. And if anybody doesn't know just how corrupt the CIA and the FBI in Boston, especially in Boston, are, go watch the movie Black Mass with Johnny Depp, which is basically the biographical story of what was his name? You know, he was on the run for all those years. He was like the Irish godfather of Boston.
Whitey Bulger.
Whitey Bulger was also a victim of MKUltra. Like Reese was on here last week talking about MKUltra. Back when Whitey Bulger was in jail, I don't know, he was doing like a stint for armed robbery or something in the early 50s. He got time off of his sentence. I think he was in Walpole at the time. And the CIA came to him and said, if you let us experiment on you and mess around with you, we'll take a couple of years off your sentence. So they were messing around with him and MKUltra, and he had a long history, you know, tied. And probably those two guys that you're watching there, probably FBI agents. They kill people all the time. And like you said, the police car stops and they just walk up. Well, why don't you go try walking up on a police car while the cop's just sitting there, see how they react to you. They don't let anybody walk up on you like that.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of stuff, the Boston bombing. Fetzer did a lot of good work on that. I wanted to mention to Diana too, while she was still in there, maybe she could have pulled up the video. I don't know if you guys saw it, but about a month before the Boston bombing, there was an episode of what is that show? You know, with Peter Griffin, the Family Guy.
Family Guy. Yes, I heard about that.
Okay, so there's an episode. I think it's actually called Turban Cowboy, and in the episode, Peter Griffin wins the Boston Marathon by running everybody over with his car, and there's blood all over the streets, just like in the Boston Marathon. It was like a month to the day that that it happened. And then he wins the Boston Marathon for that. And then there's, I don't know if it was the same episode or it was another episode where he converts to Islam, and then there's all these bombs, and the guy that converts him to Islam looks exactly like one of the Sarnia brothers. And they're planting all these bombs all over, and he gives Peter a phone. Every time Peter dials on the phone, a bomb goes off somewhere. And the same the show that ran after it, it's called American Dad, where he's like in the CIA, the dad, the main character. They did an episode also, like right after that, where they go out to a show, and then they get back, and he's telling the girl, or the girl, it was the son and his girlfriend. He's like, boom, second boom. It was like the greatest show ever. So they put all this stuff in the TV thing. Yeah, there you go, Turban Cowboy. And the guy who was like, there's that scene of the guy with the amputee, and then they're running, and the guy's like helping carry the amputee guy.
Interesting.
The guy who was wearing the hat is, they call, he was some, he had a Hispanic name.
Carlos Arredondo or something.
Right. That's it. Yeah, yep. Fetzer did a lot of good work. Boom.
Yeah, but it says right here, the episode, it was called Turban Cowboy, it removed from syndication and streaming due to the Boston Marathon bombing that occurred a month after it first aired, with the cutaway of Peter plowing his car through the runners, which had been edited with the ending where he accidentally blows up a bridge in a clip. Mm-hmm. Imagine that. A month before. Imagine that.
It was like exactly a month to the day.
Imagine that.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Well, yeah, they put a lot of this stuff out there.
Yeah.
Now, this was aired a month before, but it would have had to have been produced before then.
Yeah, probably. Probably a couple. But they plan these things way in advance, Diane.
And someone says they always let us know what they're going to be doing. It's like they feel almost invulnerable to questioning or scrutiny.
Well, they throw it in your face. That's what they do. You know? Hi, Reese. We see you there. How's it going?
Oh, going pretty good. Just dodging a few raindrops here in New York City. I was chiming in on the conversation. Just as I started speaking with you, my earbud died. Let me take the other one and put it on, because they put down at like 5% here. Let's
see, this should. Okay.
I had a few things to say about the Boston bombing. I wanted to mention about E. Michael Jones. I don't know if you've got the video that I sent you from BitChute.
Did you send it today?
During the week, earlier in the week.
Oh, I whatever you sent me, I probably looked at it. You got to remind me, because I watch a lot of stuff.
It's worth watching. And actually, the guy that produced that video is actually a Catholic. I believe he's a traditional Catholic himself. Let me tell you something. He eviscerates Dr. E. Michael Jones' contention that Father Lenz and these other Catholics were being persecuted because they were Catholics.
Yeah.
And
I saw that
documentary. Did you see that? Yeah, you've seen it.
Yeah. You're talking about the Australian Christian fascist guy.
Yeah.
That's Christopher Reed. That's his name. I think it's Christopher Reed. I think his name is. Diane, do you remember?
I don't remember his real name, but yes, the Australian Christian fascist was nailed every single point with documentation, books, quotes, footnotes, two parts of it. And E. Michael Jones just blew him off. His information was irrelevant.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dr. Jones would have no rebuttal for him.
No.
And I also know additional information on it as well. I was trying to look up an account. It's very difficult to find these things. They've deep-sixed them. It was basically just prior to the outbreak of the war that there was a Catholic priest. I believe he was in, I don't know if it was Berlin, but he was a very well-known church or cathedral. And they send some Marxists over there. And this priest, when I read the account, he was definitely in on it. So essentially what it was is they sent a bunch of Jews, you know, pretending to be Catholics into this church. And they started to agitate during the middle of the Mass. and then the priest addressed it. I think it was staged. And then what never happens at a Catholic Mass, especially in the 1930s or 40s, mm-hmm. is that everyone breaks out in applause. That would never happen if those people weren't Jewish plants that were put in there. And then they used that Catholic priest because they sold him on the idea of, you know, we poor Jews are being persecuted, and he was aiding them, and they started frontlining him. I mean, it's outrageous. Does E. Michael Jones speak about the fact that the rat lines were set up by the Catholic Church specifically to help Jews escape Nazi Germany and give them fake
ideas? I sent this information to him. He's never responded to that.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. That's really, that was the origins of the rat lines, was the church, you know, protecting Jews. And, you know, Pope Pius XII, they say that he was, quote unquote, sinfully silent about the ongoing, you know, Holocaust that was taking place and persecution of Jews. But the truth is, Pius XII was silent because there was nothing to talk about.
Nothing to talk about. Nothing going on. Right, right.
And Opus Dei happens to be a very highly respected Catholic intelligence agency, and the CIA had used it during World War II to penetrate German intelligence. That's how good the Catholics are. The Jesuits and several other networks that they had. Opus Dei was one of them. So we have the Catholic Church knew that Hitler was the last stand against the spread of international communism.
That's right.
And, you know, shame on E. Michael Jones. I agree with him. You know, he's an amazing historian. His culture wars he's got right, except for one thing. And if you heard the debate that he had recently with Jordan Peterson.
Really?
I mean, Jordan Peterson took him to the woodshed. He did not have an answer or a rebuttal for Jordan Peterson, because Jordan Peterson is like me. Bullet points, one after another, bullet points, not blathering and rambling on, one bullet point after another, IQ, the bell curve, this history of African civilization, not one city was ever constructed, you know, their lack of accomplishments.
Yeah.
E. Michael Jones could do nothing but shout over him and then respond, oh, well, we have to look at the fatherless rate in the black community, you know, not addressing any of the points that were being brought out.
He did that with Jim, too, when he could not deal with the topics. And this was during the so-called – Jim was supposed – well, actually, Gemma was a kind of moderating between the two. And you could tell that Jim was scoring some points. He would say one thing, and then E. Michael Jones would try to bowl him over with all sorts of intellectual quotes. Yeah. And it had nothing to do with it. But it's to attempt to intimidate, and understand that was a tactic he used with his students, too. Great. I wish I could have had that class. Yeah.
Yeah, so, he's an academic. He's an academic, and you've got to respect his accomplishments. So I will never detract from that. You know, he's got a great amount of knowledge. But I'm going to tell you what may be at work here. Dr. Jones has been attending decades of Novus Ordo Catholic masses. And I'm going to tell you, as someone who's attended a number of them myself, and had to stomach them, especially these homilies and the blessings, you know, praying God, you know, bless the suffering that's going on in Haiti right now. But it's always directed towards the immigrants coming in. We always have to feel sorry. They're programming you. So I believe Dr. Jones has been subject to so much, let's call it what it is, brainwashing by the Novus Ordo Church, that he actually believes some of the bullshit. That, for instance, the blacks are intellectual equivalents of the white race.
Which they are. There's a whole IQ thing. I mean, it's measured, right? I'm an IQ of 138, so I'm not worried about that personally.
Wow.
Listen, we have another visitor in the room. Larry, did you want to come in and say something?
Yes. Can you hear me, Jim?
Yes.
Well.
Oh, okay. Well, hey, you know, one thing I wanted to thank you, Jim. I think it was maybe 3-4 years ago that I first reached out to you and called you. I just wanted to thank you for making your contact information available, because it's, you know, it's pretty lonely out there. You know, you go down this path. But anyway, also, Diane, also, I know that you... you stayed in touch with Benton Bradbury and his family, And, you know, recently, well, I want to say it was, I think, last December. So I crossed paths with Dave Gaharry.
Yes.
And anyway, long story short, I did read the updated, revised version of The Myth of German Villainy.
Right.
And so I know that I take it that you and Jim had something to do with that taking place.
We agonized over the possibility of, he did put everything in. Dave was extremely generous and nice. The family was prepared to edit the offensive words and print and ideas out of Benton's book. So I just basically looked at the intro, the thing that Benton had written, and he's nailed the Jews on that one. I said, what in the world are they going to do? Well, I think that they realized it was an enormous undertaking. And they were able to get it, the 2016, the original author house put it back on the market because they had terminated the contract with the Bradburys. Well, they renewed it, put it back on the market. You still can, I think, get it at Target. I don't know about Walmart, but you know, and so the 2016. But as I understand it, because all the effort that went in the book, the 2023, I think that's what the year of it, Dave edited. And I said, so you edited out, you know, certain sentences. He says, I went word by word on the book. So it's a work of art, and it should be recommended. 2016 isn't bad, but 2023 is far superior.
Yeah, it was as far as just the format and just the logical order, you know, it was very, very good. I mean, the chapters were not too long. You could follow things, and it was very well organized, very well. And so, but, no, you know, one thing it's funny. I mean, talking with Dave, you know, he made the comment that just, you know, people don't read anymore.
You're right.
And I thought, well, you know, I hadn't really, it didn't surprise me, but, you know, I started asking some of my acquaintances, and it's like, man, these people, they have the ability to read, but for whatever reason, they're too lazy. But you broach these subjects, and there seem to be these, they're experts on these topics that they've done zero research on, other than what they've seen in the, you know, our Jewish,
or what they've been told. Yeah. That's the problem. What they've been told.
Yeah. I mean, between the movies, what they've learned in school and the government, that's their education, and they think they know
the news.
It's just unbelievable.
Yes, sir.
And you know, I was talking with an acquaintance. Actually, he's Japanese. In fact, his dad in World War II was part of the 442 division that fought in Europe. And you know, we'd had some little bit of discussion, and he's telling me how he's, you know, well versed on World War II. And it didn't take very long, and it's like, no, he's not very knowledgeable at all. And even just bringing up 9/11, and he's telling me how the official version that, you know, hey, if you're a structural engineer, you understand these things. And so I ask him, and it turns out he wasn't even aware of Building 7, you know,
two
buildings went down. I thought, oh my gosh. But I mean, just the ignorance out there, it's just appalling.
Yes, sir.
Well, listen, we're getting kind of close to the ending of our show. Storm, we have one more person in the queue here. Stormy, did you want to say something for a minute or so?
Hey, Stormy.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
You only got like a minute or two, so because we
gotta... I don't know if you guys covered this because I'm coming in late, but I just wanted to get all of your thoughts on this mass awareness abroad and domestically, especially on the school campuses, about this Zionist imperialism that's happening, and all these people protesting, invest their colleges investing in Israel.
Yeah.
I mean, they're out there literally putting their bodies and their futures on the line, protesting what Israel's doing.
That's awesome. Unfortunately, the fix is in where Israel's concerned. I applaud their, if the UN can't or won't do anything, you know, they huff and puff. These college students are. Remember the Vietnam War? Okay, yeah, there was a certain impact in that regard, but it may be there may be some blowback as a result of their involvement. But I think that Jim has talked about this too. That the whole purpose of any of this agitation is to keep Israel and the Holocaust in the forefront always.
And that's what
I think we're going to see another. I think we're going to see another Kent State type of.
Well, I'm thinking that. I think so.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw. I think it was in. It was actually in Texas. There was some professor. She wasn't even doing anything. The cop just tackled her, put her in an arm bar, and beat the hell out of her and arrested her. And she was a professor. She wasn't even like one of these student radicals. She was just there, like, you know, just observing the whole thing. So, and of course, the police are out of control.
Yeah, the police are out of control. Yeah, no restraints.
They kneel before BLM, who was actually burning the country down. But these people, you know, oh, we have to go in there and break it everything up. So it's
they're bullies. They can't take on somebody who's stronger than them that can defend themselves.
Well, listen, look, we're getting close to the end. I have a video we're going to play at the end of this. But anyway, listen, you guys next week, come in a little earlier that we can have more conversation.
Absolutely. That would be fabulous.
We ran out of time here, all right? But we appreciate you coming in, everybody. I know it's kind of quick. Some of you didn't get to say too much. But next week, come in earlier, and we can talk about more things, okay? Now, we're going to end. I want to thank everybody for coming in. We're going to end with Country Joe and the Fish. This was a really good song, if you remember it, from Woodstock, right?
What are we fighting for?
Come on, all you big strong men, Uncle Sam, need your help again. He's got himself in a terrible jam, way down yonder in Vietnam. So put down your books, pick up a gun, gonna have a whole lot of fun. And it's one, two, three, what are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn, next stop is Vietnam. And it's five, six, seven, open up the pearly gates. Ain't no time to wonder why we're wrong all the time. Well, come on, General, let's move fast. Your big chance has come at last. Gotta go out and get those reds. The only good promise is one that's dead. And you know the peace could only be won when the glory of all the kingdom come. And it's one, two, three, what are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. Next stop is Vietnam. And it's five, six, seven, open up the pearly gates. Well, there ain't no time to wonder why we're all gonna die. Just hold the crank, and if you drop the bomb, they drop it on a Viet Cong. And it's one, two, three, what are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. Next stop is Vietnam. And it's five, six, seven, open up the pearly gates. Well, ain't no time to wonder why we're all gonna die. Well, come on, brothers, throughout the land, back your boys up to Vietnam. Come on, fathers, don't hesitate. Send them off before it's too late. Be the first one on the block. Every boy come home in a box. And it's one, two, three. What are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. Next stop is Vietnam. And it's five, six, seven. Open up the pearly gates. Well, ain't no time to wonder why we're all gonna die.
All right, everyone. Look, thank you for being on. And like I said, come in early next.
Absolutely.
And we'll talk some more. And again, thanks. Hoaxbusters signing off. Good night, everybody. Take care.